Welcome to Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Today, we have ourselves a true innovator in Gabby Lewis. Gabby was born in Israel and raised in Scotland, and then moved to the U.S. to attend Brown University, where he earned a dual degree in philosophy and economics. He's taught English in the Amazon, where he ate his first insect, and worked at the world's largest hedge fund and received numerous grants for social entrepreneurship. He's a competitive powerlifter and once cycled down the world's most dangerous road in Bolivia, which maybe we can learn something about later. He was one of only a handful of travelers in his group who remained unscathed from the experience. Gabby is now the co-founder of Exo Protein. Gabby, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Happy to be here.
Great. So this will be interesting. I'm certain about that. And let me kick it off with maybe a little bit of background, but I really, really want to learn about how you got to where you are today. As I understand, the story started in about 2013 when you and your college roommates ordered 2,000 live crickets. Why don't you just go ahead and take it from there?
Yeah, of course. Well, why do I backtrack a little bit and explain why we ordered those 2,000 live crickets? We had read a report by the United Nations in early 2013, which was actually the United Nations' most downloaded report in history. And in that report, they argued that we should be eating bugs as a staple of our diet here in the US. And the reasons for doing so are very compelling. So insects are remarkably nutritionally dense. They're packed with bioavailable, top-quality protein, micronutrients like iron, calcium, B vitamins, full of omega-3s, so really, really good for you. And they're also tremendously resource efficient. So compared to conventional protein sources, insects are extremely environmentally friendly to raise, meaning you can just go indoors, they require very little feed, water, or space. So they're great for you, great for the planet, and that was what this United Nations report was talking about. But what it didn't address was how you can actually convince Americans to eat insects. It was saying we should be doing it, but it didn't say how or why. And so my college roommate and I teamed up and decided to start a company whose mission was to introduce insects to the American population. And we decided that the easiest way to do so would be not through convincing people to eat plates of stir-fried grasshoppers, but rather through creating some kind of packaged food product which made eating bugs more accessible and easy and could pave the way for a broader group of products eventually. So we came up with the idea for our cricket protein bar. And we then ordered those 2,000 crickets you alluded to our dorm room on Brown University's campus, turned them into a basic protein powder made from crickets, and combined that with some nuts and dried fruits and made the world's first batch of cricket protein bars. And that was 3.5 years ago, and we've been building the business ever since.
I can only imagine the number of code violations when you brought 2,000 crickets into a dorm room at a university. It must have been a little bit, shall we say, I don't know, maybe not just risky, but like what would have happened if they got loose?
Well, you know, we don't go too deep into the story very often, but a few did indeed get loose, and they are very hard to catch, I'll tell you that. So we had all six of our roommates running around our house on campus trying to catch a few crickets that escaped. Pretty sure we got them all, but there might have been a couple that got away for good.
Yeah. So I haven't read the UN report. I'm sure you know it pretty much by hand, but let's talk a little bit about from the global perspective of why insects. And I'm gonna take a stab at it. There's plenty of insects. They are obviously, you know, when you talk about, you know, a renewable resource, I think insects have quite a track record of millions of years. And, you know, I would assume that they're a high percent is protein, because I don't know many insects that are, you know, fat, if you will. So what are the reasons cited by the UN report of why insects should be turned to as a source of food and protein for the US and the world?
Yeah, well, firstly, it's important to recognize that insects are already a staple protein source for much of the world. So depending on where you're looking at, they eat everything from grasshoppers in Central America, to termites in Africa, to crickets in Thailand, and the list goes on. It's really only Western Europe and the US that have this cultural aversion to eating insects. And all over the world, it's far more common. And the reasons for why it's common are essentially twofold. On the one hand, they're incredibly good for you and nutritious. So you mentioned they're very high in protein, but not only protein, they're also high in micronutrients. So gram for gram, crickets have more iron than beef, for example, more calcium than milk. So I hate using this word because it's so overused, but they really are a true superfood. Very, very good for you, no matter what your dietary goals are. And then the second reason to consume insects is environmental. So the kind of negative environmental impact of factory farming and livestock is pretty well documented. And even though the statistics are somewhat debatable, whatever way you look at it, farming cows at a massive industrial scale for protein is not very efficient. You need somewhere between 5 and 20 pounds of feed to get 1 pound of edible beef protein at the end, depending on whose statistics you believe. Whereas crickets are 1-to-1. So it's somewhere between 5 and 20 times more resource efficient, only looking at the feed, to get protein from crickets as opposed to cows. And then there's zero methane produced. There's very little water required, and you can farm them vertically indoors. You don't need huge areas of farmland to raise this protein. So great for you, great for the planet. The only downside is basically the consumer psychology, and that's the problem that we're trying to solve here.
Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty stark difference, those numbers that you shared. And let's get into that consumer psychology. And I don't want to be completely upfront. I have tried your product. And for anyone listening, I would say any of your preconceived notions should just be dismissed. You don't feel any odd crunch or, beyond your typical protein bar. It tastes like food. I just want to get that out there. And I'm sure that's through the manufacturing process. But, when you talk about the psychology, I think even you can, appreciate that, there are cultural differences, and to get into the different animals that are consumed in other cultures that in the United States would be considered taboo, even perhaps. So knowing that it's a large gap that is not necessarily evolutionarily instilled in us, but is culturally, how do you plan on getting over that gap? And I'm sure that there's others that are in your situation where, there's other products out there that are seeking to get over that gap. And how quickly, or what's the time frame that you see that? I mean, is this a generational turnover that we need to look at? Or, do you think that with where things are headed, that we're more in, within a few years, this may be acceptable? And then I think I'd add one more question to that. Demographically, is it working in your favor, both in, the kind of multiculturalism and perhaps, I don't know, I could imagine maybe younger people adapting more than older people. So I know there are about 5 questions in there, but I'm sure you've thought about it. So go ahead.
Yeah, all fantastic questions. Firstly, every culture has some things which are weird and some things which are normal when you look at food. And so it's certainly the case that we think many foods that are consumed overseas are weird, but it goes both ways, right? So the fact that we commonly drink the milk from a lactating cow is the weirdest thing to many Asian cultures. It's totally gross that we drink milk and eat cheese. And then, of course, it's weird to us that some cultures eat lots of bugs. So every culture's got some things which are weird, and none of it's grounded in logic, like you said, or evolution. It's purely circumstantial and cultural and kind of byproduct of the time and place we live in. What's really interesting is that these things change and fluctuate over time. And so even just looking at the US, different time periods, there are various foods that were once really weird and bizarre to us, or even taboo, like you said, and are now cool or aspirational or just plain old normal and boring. And so there are a couple that we pay really close attention to. Sushi is probably the best case study for us. Looking back 30 years ago, the idea of eating raw fish was totally bizarre to most Americans. It's slimy, it's foreign, it's just not something you look at as food. And the way sushi became popularized in the US was through the invention of the California roll in Los Angeles. And a sushi chef there basically replaced the fatty tuna with local avocado and turned the roll inside out, wrapped it with seaweed, and he reimagined sushi for Western palates and created an introductory vehicle to ease people into the idea of eating raw fish. And so that's essentially what we're trying to do with these protein bars. We're trying to create the California roll of insect cuisine. And we think that building some kind of introductory vehicle to make it accessible and easy for Americans to take their first bite of insects is really important. And that was how sushi became popular. And there are a bunch of other examples of foods that were once weird or not normal. They don't all follow that same sushi analogy, but they have a few other things in common. So lobster is another example, which 100 years ago was viewed as vermin of the sea, barely even suitable for prisoners or servants. And in fact, there was a rebellion at some prisons in Maine because the prisoners were being fed lobster every night, and that was viewed as cruel and unusual punishment. And of course, now lobster is the epitome of decadence. And the way lobster made that transition was a kind of top-down movement in the fine dining world, where many of the best chefs were using lobster and covering it in garlic butter and whatever else. And it took this place as a kind of epitome of gourmet food. So we take cues from both of those foods. And so we are working with a lot of high-end chefs. Our head of R&D was formerly the head chef of R&D at a restaurant called The Fat Duck in England. Ran number one in the world while he was there. And then, of course, we take a few from sushi and we make the California roll of insects through this cricket protein bar.
Thank you for sharing that. Those are fascinating analogs. The sushi, yeah, I can only imagine 30, 40, 50 years ago, it'd just be unheard of. And lobster is interesting because if you think about it, a lobster, I don't know exactly what genus it lives in, but it's kind of a bug. I mean, when you're really...
Yeah, we were at a trade show recently, and I wore a t-shirt saying crickets are just tiny lobsters, and everyone loved it. It's totally true. We even own the website Shrimp of the Land, in case you want to use it for marketing one day. So there, and this just goes back to the idea that none of these preconceived notions we have are grounded in any logic, right? Like, we think it's totally normal to eat a giant crab, which when you look at it objectively is totally gross to look at, yet for some reason it's weird to eat a small grasshopper or cricket. And so none of this really makes any objective sense. It's just purely cultural, and the good news for us is that these cultural kind of interpretations can change over time.
Well, you have my mind tied up in a pretzel right now, so let's move on. So the products that you have, I think it's about 8 or 9 different products, and they're all protein bars at this point, correct?
Correct. We have 5 flavors of kind of classic sweet protein bars, flavors like peanut butter and jelly and apple cinnamon. We released a line of savory bars last year, limited edition line. Those aren't available right now, but they may come back at some point in the future. And so those were barbecue, mango curry, more true meal replacement bars, which were pretty unique in the protein bar space. Mm-hmm.
And do you have immediate or long-term plans to, expand with your process of generating cricket flour into foods beyond protein bars?
Absolutely. Neither my co-founder nor myself got into this business because we love protein bars. We got into this business Because we think there's an entirely untapped food group, and there are 1,600 species of edible insects, all of which are environmentally friendly, high-quality protein sources, and there's a lot to be done with them. So protein bars are the kind of Trojan horse. They're the first product for us to prove that Americans and Europeans are willing to eat bugs, but they're certainly not the last product.
Hmm. 1,600 bugs, huh? How many have you tried?
Less than 1,600.
So I want to talk a little bit about your ascension here. It looks like about 8 months ago you raised $4 million in a Series A round, and in total you've raised somewhere around 5.6. Surely your unique product helped at the very least garner attention and peak interest. But how have you been so successful in raising capital, and what advice would you have for others considering this round?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd love to take credit for it myself, but I think honestly, it's an idea that just makes so much sense. And investors, especially tech investors, are getting more and more interested in the food space. And they're kind of asking themselves, if we were to redesign our food system from scratch, what would that look like? Mm. And it probably wouldn't look like farming cows where you need 20 pounds of grain to get 1 pound of beef, and you need tons of water and land to do it in order to get that protein at the end. It would probably look something more like farming insect protein in vertical indoor farms in a very resource efficient way where you don't need any water and you need very little feed. And I think a lot of investors that come from tech backgrounds especially are recognizing that, and they see the value in this new protein source, and they like the challenge and the marketing challenge of trying to get Americans to change their minds about this, which is a challenge that we're also really excited about. So we've been fortunate enough to find some really amazing partners, both in the kind of tech world, but also the food world. And there are many, many trends in the food world right now which all point to what we're doing. So there's a very clear trend towards plant-based eating. But the more fundamental trends that are underlying that trend also point towards insects, right? So consumers care more and more about the environmental footprint of what they're eating. They care more and more about ingredient labels that are clean and simple and short and pronounceable. And there are also various diet trends like paleo and gluten-free. And what we're doing is kind of at the intersection of all these different movements and trends. So I think the timing is right. We've been able to find some people that believe in what we believe in.
Hmm. And how are you putting that fresh capital to work right now?
There's a lot to be done. You know, we're building, most companies, they've either got a product they're trying to convince people to buy, or they've got some kind of ingredient or product, right? It's either supply or demand focus, but we're basically doing both. So we're doing a lot of work on the demand side to convince people to eat insects and generate awareness and educate consumers and ultimately sell this product. But then there's also no supply chain for crickets. And so we're having to work with partners on the farming side, on the processing, on the manufacturing, on the R&D to figure out what is the best way to farm crickets at scale. And then what is the most efficient way to turn those crickets into protein powder. So there's a ton of work to be done. And probably our biggest struggle right now is figuring out which of these many areas deserves the most focus. Where we've ended up is we're doing a lot of work on the back end of the supply chain and the processing at first, and trying to build a really stable foundation to then scale from.
And I'm interested a little bit in the, you mentioned kind of the farming of crickets, and without you know, divulging who your suppliers are, or is it domestically farmed?
It is, yeah. We work with a handful of farms in the US and Canada. And okay. We work very closely with them on raising the best possible crickets we can.
Okay. And let's do a little bit of math here. So you have a protein bar. Start with the first question. How many crickets are required to create one protein bar?
40.
14, was that 1-4?
No, 4-0.
4-0, okay. And how man, I don't know how to ask this question because I never have. How quickly are crickets born and grown? You see the question I'm trying to get at, which is
this. The life cycle is about 6 weeks.
6 weeks, okay. So,
and just to throw some more numbers in the works, a single female cricket lays 1,500 eggs.
Okay, yeah.
Every couple of weeks.
Okay, so yeah, it really is highly sustainable. It's no wonder you're able to find 2,000 crickets as a college student there. And let's, it's just, this is just so mind-blowing. And what you said was interesting, that if you were going to reinvent, like communication, clearly we've reinvented it, right? I mean, that's been completely reinvented. Everything from the technology and devices used to, I would say, how we communicate, you know, with brevity having such an important role in how we communicate now and being accepted. And now you're sitting back and you're saying, okay, if we started feeding ourselves from scratch, what would that look like to begin with? And I'm curious who else is kind of in your peer group right now? And I guess water probably factors into this as well, but who else is in your peer group that is really completely reinventing what isn't even like an industry? It's a necessity, right? I mean, phones aren't a necessity. They're an industry, but feeding ourselves started all the way back. Who else is kind of in the peer group right now for really, really, really rethinking how we get our, our different intakes?
Yeah, well, there are some, I'm really interested in the companies that are doing cellular agriculture and growing meat in labs from stem cells. I think that's really fascinating, and that's really cutting edge. So there are a couple of groups here in the US, there's one in the Netherlands, and they're taking stem cells from either chickens or cows, and they're growing those into either beef patties or chicken tenders in a lab. And right now it's extraordinarily expensive. So I believe that 2 years ago, the beef patty cost about $325,000 to make a single beef patty. Now it's down to $12 a burger, still expensive, but you can see the trend and the direction that's going in. I believe the chicken tender that's grown in a lab costs about $9,000 right now, but that's also falling dramatically. So that's one fascinating area that's still really in its infancy. And then there are other ingredients as well that are really interesting. So for all the reasons that insects are a sensible food source, I think algae is also a really interesting food source. So you can also kind of grow that indoors in bioreactors, and the inputs required in terms of energy are really low to get protein and nutrients from algae. And then there are other companies that are kind of reinventing like how we think about food nutrition. So I'm sure you've read about or even tried Soylent, and they're really interesting because they kind of think they've cracked the code on what humans need for nutrition, and their single shake can provide you with absolutely everything your body requires. I think we're probably not quite there yet in understanding human nutrition, but it's a really interesting concept to imagine a world where we're only consuming our calories through these kind of tasteless shakes. It's not going to be my ideal, but it's an interesting shakeup of how we think about food.
You mentioned cost, and you've hit a pretty strong price point. Direct through exoprotein.com, you're right around the $3 range, a little bit, $3.50 range. What was key to for you to, I suppose, at some point drive down your cost, so that now, from a cost standpoint, I would offer that you are just as competitive as any other protein bar out there. What was the point that really helped you? Was it just pure scale, or any other realizations?
Yeah, honestly, we're not really there yet on cost, so we're definitely not an unreasonable price, but we're on the top end of the market. We're definitely a premium bar right now. That's largely because we use premium ingredients beyond just the crickets. So we use nut butters that are very expensive, certain dried fruits like strawberries and blueberries that are very expensive, as opposed to many other bars that might just use like gums and binders and preservatives and artificial sweeteners. All of that was deliberate because we believe we need to introduce this idea to the kind of top end of the market. But our goal is to eventually release really, really affordable protein sources that are more fully cricket as well. So cricket is one of many ingredients in these existing bars. We'd love it to be the number one ingredient. We'd love to be able to release a pure cricket protein powder. But if we were to do that right now, it would be a little bit expensive because gram for gram, cricket protein is still more expensive than soy protein, for example, which is obviously at a gigantic scale and heavily subsidized, or even whey protein, which is not necessarily subsidized, but that was previously a waste byproduct of the cheese making process. So it's very cheap as an ingredient.
So right now you can purchase at, again, it's exoprotein, and that's spelled exoprotein.com. Where else can people find your product?
That's the best place, is exoprotein.com. If they're on the East Coast, they can find us in Wegmans stores. And they can also find us on Amazon if they prefer to do their online shopping on Amazon.
Great. And what's next for what's on the horizon for you? Just increase distribution, or without divulging too much, are there any other kind of tricks that you're seeing?
Yeah, we're working on a lot of exciting new products. Without telling you too much, imagine anything you can add protein powder to, and we're basically experimenting with it. So everything from protein shakes to baking mixes, pancakes, anything you might want to fortify with additional protein in powder form, where we're experimenting on. Our chef even sent us a picture of a high-protein, gluten-free pizza dough he made in his kitchen a few weeks ago. That's not something we're going to put in stores anytime soon, but we're testing a lot of exciting products.
Awesome. Well, you're said to say that you're an innovator would be an understatement. I think, you know, it's rare to see, you know, a company truly act on, you know, one of those global reports like you saw from the UN that you were inspired by and act on it and, you know, achieving a lot of success as well. So I want to thank you for joining us, and I really strongly encourage anyone that's out there to give them a shot. I am a little bit of a picky eater, I would say, overall. And I had to take a deep breath, but I can say that all of my biases and everything were wrong, as you said, that it's nothing more than a product of where I grew. And I enjoyed the product. And I stress again, you would in absolutely no way, shape, or form know that you're eating crickets, but it's interesting to think about it, eating it not only from a standpoint of taste and nutrition also, but, you know, eating something that is so sustainable and perhaps might be critical in a necessity in the next few decades or even before with growing populations and, you know, challenges with supply chains and distributions around the world. So it's been a pleasure speaking with someone that is really, truly doing something different and helping everyone out in the process.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking to you.
You're welcome. Best of luck to you.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, the Chef's Best Production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. As always, visit chefsbest.com to learn more.